everyone, and welcome to another episode of Upzoned, where every week we take just one big story from the news that touches the Strong Tones conversation, and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. This week, we are bringing you a story from, brace yourselves, Engineering News Record, which, as you can imagine, is from an engineer's perspective. It is called State DOTs, Departments of Transportation, receive an extra $4 billion from the Federal Highway Administration from unspent 2019 balances. Now, we know that that's a very scintillating title, but we're here to unpack why this is actually kind of an outrageous thing if you are someone who cares about infrastructure and its role in making our cities stronger or weaker. I'm here today with the very smart and awesome person who suggested this article, John Reuter. How are you doing?
Hello, it's great to talk to you again. It's been a while.
I know. We've both been running around. Chuck has been running around. I've been like looking for co-hosts everywhere. And then I was like, oh, duh, I haven't talked to John in a little bit. So let's get him back on there. What's been going on in Seattle with you?
You know, for once, I end up jumping around the country a lot for my day job. And for once, I've actually been stably in Seattle, like enjoying my puppy Franklin and seeing my wife for a change. And so that's been a nice change of pace. Although this weekend, actually, I'm headed on a plane again to head up to Canada to actually talk to a planning conference up there for Strongtown. So looking forward to that as well.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear more about that event. Well, Chuck is on the road right now for the kickoff of the Strong America Tour. I just wanted to give that a quick shout out. Or usually I would invite my favorite engineer on to talk about this. But John, you actually brought this article to my attention. Tell me a little bit about what it is, and not to put too much pressure on you to explain the incredibly twisted highway funding mechanisms we have in this country, and why Strongtown's advocates should be a little flustered by this.
Well, this is basically, for engineers and for an engineer's news source, like a super celebratory article, right? It's written in kind of a plain tone, but the breathlessness and the excitement, I think, by engineering standards shows through. And what it says is basically because money wasn't spent in certain areas of transportation funding, it means $4 billion has been swept up and sent out to state transportation departments around the country for shovel-ready projects, right? And so we can do a bunch more building of transportation infrastructure all over this country. And this is a pretty regular event for this particular pot of money to get swept up in this way and sent out. But part of why they're so excited is that it's a particularly large sum this year. It's perhaps the second largest sum ever. The record was like $4.2 billion. And so $4 billion actually by, you know, what's $200 million here or there is considered pretty close to that mark, as the article says. That's what the article, right, in its own thing says. It says, hey, look, we got a bunch of money for infrastructure. Isn't this great? State transportation departments are going to be able to do a bunch of projects. And that means that if you're an engineer or you're in a building trade or you're a city or a town or a state who has some projects ready, isn't this a great thing for you? This is a pretty typical internal conversation that I don't think those of us I think actually we see a lot, right? This internal conversation, we don't usually see it like in the engineers talking to other engineers in like this news article way, which I think is kind of a fun inside peek. But this kind of tone of celebration around big money to do new projects is this whole core promotion of what we call the infrastructure cult, which there's actually some pretty good coverage of on the Strongtown site this week.
Absolutely. Daniel Harridge's just a really good article about traffic projections that I will put in the comments to this article if you want to check it out. But let's be clear about one thing that I think is pretty outrageous in this article. They say that they had $4 billion left over in federal highway funds. That does not mean that like states or the entities applying for these funds, like just like we're shrugging and saying, we don't really need this money. They basically, to make a bureaucratic long story short, they chunk up our highway spending into various pots, and states requested over $8 billion in total across America for all of these various projects, but they didn't request it enough from these two particular little pots. If you are a technical professional, it was the Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act or the Infrastructure for Rebuilding America Grant. I don't know what either of those things are, but point being, they had this money left over and states gladly accepted it, which because they had applied through other channels and they hadn't had the opportunity to do that. Why is that a problem for our cities in particular if their states take this free money? Isn't this just a windfall, John?
So, you know, I've been thinking about this lately, and what it reminds me of most, and bear with me for a second, is Extreme Makeover Home Edition.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you know this show, right? Uh-huh. But it's where they go in and there's some, like, you know, middle-classish or maybe even a lower middle-classish home and a family that's gone through some sort of hard event and certainly deserves our sympathy and our support. And they go in and they take this family's house and they basically supersize it, right? They'll add a pool. They'll add more play areas. They'll add more red rooms. They'll add nicer fixtures to everything. They'll add, you know, 2,000 square feet to a house that was 1,000 square feet to begin with, right? And they'll add skylights. And they basically turn a modest home into a quote-unquote like a dream house. And the show ends, right, with the family going through and touring their new house and tears of joy and excitement and just, isn't this amazing what we have? What an amazing gift. This is like the best thing ever. And what you'll see now is some of the coverage that's followed this show is some going back to a lot of these families and talking to them and saying, hey, so how's it been living in this great new home? And what you'll find is in many of the cases, the families aren't even in that home anymore. And the reason why is they couldn't afford all the increased costs. They couldn't afford the increased heating bill, the increased water bill, the increased maintenance costs. Sure, also things like the taxes going up. But all of those things come together and they go, I can't actually afford this new quote-unquote dream house that you've given me here. And so I think in the most optimistic view of what's happening here is what's happening is the federal government is giving all this money out to states and the money's flowing through into local cities and counties and small towns. And they're getting these projects and they're building these wider roads and they're building these very expensive pieces of infrastructure that are almost always actually additional road miles rather than actually just simply street repair. And we can talk a little bit more about what I mean by additional miles. But what they're doing is they're building these things in place. And the impact is the city has this brand new road, but over the long term, what cities are discovering, right? And this is part of why our place is going broke, is this amazing dream roads are actually this huge, you know, thing pulling us down and making our cities simply can't afford that new gift from the federal government, which is why there's a lot of cause for concern here.
I think that's a really, really good metaphor. I mean, when I was trying to think of a good comparison, I was like, you know, when people send you credit cards in the mail and it already has your name on it. And if you don't really understand how credit works, you think, cool, free money, but you still have to pay it back. But I think your metaphor is even better because it gets to the heart of the fact that like roads are not just gifts, they're also liabilities. And we talk a lot about infrastructure, specifically on strong towns. I would also say that there are human costs to building out our lane miles and adding to the capacity of our roads in particular, those street/road hybrids that run through our neighborhoods and operate a little like highways in areas where we're expecting people to walk. And of course, deaths have fiscal costs too for our cities. When someone dies in traffic, that is a huge, huge public safety cost, aside from the human tragedy. What should cities be doing if their states are accepting this money? Like, should states just be saying no? Like, what's the path forward here?
Well, I think that gets to a really complicated point. And I want to circle back to what you just said too, right? Because I think what I just outlined in the Extreme Makeover Home Edition is in a lot of ways the most optimistic version. And you pointed out, right, that actually these dream roads aren't even actually dream roads. They're actually in and of themselves making our cities poorer. They're actually triggering development patterns that don't actually make a lot of sense, that actually make it harder for us to actually maintain our downtowns. They're widening roads and actually knocking down street trees and actually making the places that we live less pleasant. They're making it harder for kids to walk and bike to school, right? So these roads, these dream roads, one, they're not financially helpful to cities, but two, they actually make the place a worse place to live, right? And actually damage that streetscape. Not all the time, but frequently. So what would I say to cities and towns and to states about this money? I think there's a couple things. One, if you're not in a position to be able to change what you're doing, if all of your current quote unquote shovel ready projects, which means a project that's like ready to go and ready to move, right? That has all the plans drawn up, has gone through all the public process. If all of those actually are the kind of projects that are going to long-term be unaffordable for community, and also in the short term, actually make your community a less pleasant place to live, a less safe place to live, a place that actually damages your financial well-being and the economic core of your place, you should just turn down the money. Like, don't take it. That's step one, right? And that's oftentimes what cities need to do because they're not actually ready to take the money in and use it in a productive way. Now, alternatively, and the second thing to do is, there is actually a lot of infrastructure in our community that needs to be repaired. Strongtown's orthodoxy would say you're better off just not taking the money at all. As a former city council member and someone who's like been in these positions of trying to maintain these roads, my position would be if you can take the money without adding any road miles, and what that means is not just a new road, but also an expansion of any road, right? Which is increasing it's going to increase the long-term maintenance cost of that place. But if you can actually take the money in and even better use it in ways to restructure roads and make them more walkable and build sidewalks and add street trees and build better roads while not actually expanding the footprint of those roads, that I think can make sense. And that's a place where you can actually have that revenue cycle come in, particularly if you can invest it in the core of already productive places, right? To do repairs on roads that you're going to want to repair anyway, that makes sense to be built at level of service that they're built at because they're actually in your core of your downtown or built on a traditional street grid. So that's kind of the two-part advice that I would give. The first, do no harm. And the second, looking to see if there are places that actually make sense to do that work.
Well, if you are listening to this and you are saying like, but we can't do that because of our, you know, our programs aren't structured to let cities make those choices, call me. I would love to talk to you about what policy changes would make that path a little bit more possible. I don't know, but I'm a Strongtowns advocate and I want to ask those sorts of questions. I think that's really, really crucial.
Well, and look, this is really hard. And I just want to acknowledge that it can be really hard, but I also want to say it can be done. And, we actually did this when I was on a city council up in North Idaho in the small town of Sandpoint, which I like to always bring up whenever possible. And in fact, this actually comes, I started working on this process and it ended actually after I'd come off of the city council. But there was a proposal and the state actually earmarked well over $10 million, I think it was, somewhere around that neighborhood, to actually build this project called The Curve through the middle of our downtown that would have widened this two-lane road into a four-lane and at some points five-lane, I believe, road. The strode, I guess, is the correct term for it. That would have had a really negative effect on the walkability. It would have gone right between one of the neighborhoods in our town and our downtown and cut it, that basically helped cut the community in half, right? And we looked at this and we said, this doesn't make any sense. We're better off without this taking place, without having this project come through. Even though there are certain needs here in terms of mobility and certain needs here in terms of some other negotiations around getting our streets back that involved other kinds of highways through town, we just simply can't take this because it's doing too much harm. And that was a long project that took, you know, it was a multi-year process, first for the people who argued to get this money, and it was a multi-year process to unwind it once that money had come to stop it before it actually did a lot of damage to town. So I just want to, you know, I have a lot of sympathy and empathy for those going through these processes, but it's absolutely possible to turn down the money initially, and it's absolutely possible in the middle of a process, even after that money's been earmarked, to actually unwind it and find your way back out of it again.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I just like, I don't know about those examples. And we got to get you to write an article for the site at some point about like how to say no to an infrastructure, quote unquote, investment that you know is going to make your city poor. I think that's a great object lesson that other cities can follow. And, you know, again, if you're listening to this and you're like, but my city can't follow it, talk to us. Let's figure it out together. And I'm certain that there's an advocate out there who has a story like John's that would be a little bit more applicable to your place. Any other thoughts on this article, John, before we head into the next segment of our show?
I just want to say, I think this is really core to what we need to do together as the Strong Towns movement, right? Which is change the way that we think about infrastructure spending. And it's one of the most important things that we can do in the conversations that we have with each other, that we have with or as elected officials, that we have as advocates, that we have as neighbors, that we have as members of the community, is to increasingly like recognize and like raise the understanding that infrastructure needs to be understood as a liability, not as an asset on our cities and counties' balance sheets, right? And when we start having that understanding that infrastructure is a liability, it's a cost of doing business, that doesn't mean we don't need to have any of it. Obviously, there are costs in running a city and there are costs of living in a place, but we need to understand our infrastructure as one of those costs, not as an asset, because that's going to help us have savvy and smart and thoughtful decisions about infrastructure rather than just mindlessly celebrating every new dollar and every new lane of road and every new expansion that comes along. And this change in understanding is part of how we're going to actually get the kind of strong towns that we need to be building.
I think that's a great note. And if you're thinking about buying a home or even accepting one for free from a reality TV show, that's good advice to think about too. I will say, to go back to your extreme home makeover analogy, John, I will say that I did not anticipate all the costs involved in buying my home when I purchased my house. I think it's impossible to, no matter how diligent and detailed you are, there's always going to be some weird thing that needs to be fixed, like a lot of the time. So let's have that conversation about not just roads, but about every aspect of our built environment, down to just the homes that we live in. I think that's a total paradigm change that is, for me, what Strong Towns is all about.
Right. And it's about thinking about the full life of something that we're doing, right? And not just saying, what's it like on day one, but what does it look like over a 30-year lifespan of what's the cost of this asset and what's the cost of replacement at the end of the life of it, right? And what's the cost of repair throughout it, that we don't think about these things as one-offs, right? So anyway, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think it is time to go to the down zone now. And I would love to hear what your puppy Franklin is into. Now, I've heard him make a couple of guest appearances today on his way. I know he was coming back from the vet earlier. So apologies, listeners, if you heard a little dog barking. I think it's a treat. But John, why don't you tell me what you and your dog are enjoying this week, whether it be media, whether it be, I think once you gave me a frozen dessert you were really enjoying. What have you been reading, watching to, listening to, eating, that you think our listeners should check out?
You know, this is not anything that's really consumable, but it is definitely Franklin, my dog, related. I was at the dog park the other day talking to some other dog owners, my wife and I were, and we were just talking about how different dog parks have these different tones to them, right? And just how owners interacting with each other, and it can be the same dog but a different park, and just how people relate to each other and how it just can change from place to place. And I've just been thinking a lot about that. One, like how our dogs like just pick up on our behavior and how like we treat other people. And like, you know, people say dogs look like their owners, and I don't know how true that is, but I do think dogs often have similar dispositions as their owners, that their behavior changes, they see the cues that we put out. And then how dog parks have these personalities of how all these dogs and their owners and the people, right, are all interacting with each other, that just changes the complete tone of how we like see each other and think about each other. And it sure seems to me like there are some lessons there about how we think about community in a wider way, and both how we build our communities, but just how do we relate to each other, right? And that the same kind of physical space, or even like dog parks that are just a couple blocks away from each other, how different those spaces can be and feel based just on how we relate to one another. So that's just something I've been thinking a lot about. It's not really media or anything that's consumable, but it is like one of my like personal obsessions for like the last 24 hours that hopefully has some value as I continue to come up with my unconventional down zone picks.
I love it. It's a great recommendation. Take the dog out to a park and let him romp around a little bit. I love my dog park in my neighborhood, and you're totally right that it is directly shaped by the surrounding environment. And that includes, in my dog park's corner of the woods, like little kids hopping the fence all the time trying to play with dogs that aren't theirs. And it is a big problem. But yeah, I could see a Strong Towns article coming out of that too, John. Thanks so much for the inspiration.
A related media story, a related news story that I'm obsessed with is, I don't know if you saw this, but in this Maryland, like kind of rich neighborhood, there was a dog park there, and it has become the most controversial controversial item inside of the entire neighborhood, the sort of DC suburb, where everyone's where some people, particularly one particular person, is very upset about like the dogs barking. And I always remember because when I was back on that same city council, dog parks were the single most controversial issue I ever worked with on the city council. So I'll have to tell that story sometime too, but that was the hot topic there. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'll let us wrap up here, but these are all my obsessions of the moment and thing, you know, you end up, you find out I'm 6 months into having, my wife and I having this dog. And boy, do I find myself thinking about dogs a lot more often.
Constantly. I'm 11 months into having a dog. So you know, I'm right there with you. Yeah. I hope that story continues to develop so we can make it our next episode offering. So stay tuned. All right. My turn, down zone time. I'm going to talk about a book I've been reading that I think some Strong Tones listeners will really love. It is really weird and really great. It is called Oval by Elvia Wilk. She is a American-German author, and it is set in this sort of near future Berlin where, to put it like mildly, everything and nothing has changed. What basically corporations have sort of like become the center of all society. All housing has pretty much been bought up and then replaced with like ultra eco-sustainable housing that no one can afford. So they have to plant people in there as like a form of sponsorship, basically, and like monitor their lives and broadcast them. There is no like art being made except for the kind of art that is sponsored by corporations. And there's some very not family-friendly art involved in this that it makes for some very strange satirical comedy. And the real kicker is that midway through the book, they invent a drug, which is called Oval, which is designed to solve all of the problems of this very fragmented neoliberal, to for lack of a better word, world, by making people chemically, biologically more generous. And someone launches a plot to put this into the water supply. So it is so strange. It is so weird. But I think it is a really unusual and interesting way of exploring this question of how do we shape the world around us through markets? And how do we get markets to do good? You know, this question that we're sort of always talking about at Strong Towns, it's sort of taken to this really like bizarre extreme in this book, but it's a darn fun read. So Oval by Elvia Wilk is my submission to the Down Zone this time around.
Yours are always so much smarter than my recommendations. But you know, maybe I'll read something again someday instead of just walking around with a dog. But I don't know, both are pretty enjoyable.
Read while walking around with a dog. That's my recommendation to you. Get a bench in that dog park and just sit. That's how I get most of my reading done. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Upsound. If you'd like to support the show, you can do that by just going to strongtowns.org/membership. You can also give us a 5-star review if money's a little tight this month. You can share a Strong Towns article, or you could just get out there and do what you can to build a Strong Town. Take care, everybody.